Spotify's founder Daniel Ek has raised $65 million in their Series A round for Nico Health, which is his new longevity startup. So let's go over the bear case and the bull case for this. But firstly, Adam, as our resident longevity doctor, what is Nico Health?
So it's a physical medical assessment where you go to a physical location that they control and you undergo this scan, right? The scan has a whole host of things that they measure, but it mostly is focused on skin, heart, including multiple biomarkers of heart health, but they also do blood tests.
Exactly. And if you look on their website, there's a whole bunch of other like scans that they claim to use, even things like echocardiography, grip strength, intraocular pressure, which I have proud to say I have not done one of those in quite a long time, but I do remember what it is. But those, some of those I think are part of research studies. So there's a whole bunch of stuff they can do. But yeah, it looks like their core services, skin, pictures, bloods, and...
So they're calling it a scan, but it's not a scan in the sense that most people buying this would think in like an MRI or a CT.
Yeah, it's like a mole map.
Yeah, the scan is basically the whole thing. The whole experience is a scan. They're scanning your whole body and looking at different biomarkers.
Did
you say scam? No, scan.
Freudian
scan. Sorry.
No, they're calling it a scan, but it doesn't mean scan in the medical sense. It's more a branding thing. Because they basically do a whole host of tests that you can get done at any medical provider. But I think they're packaging it all in this, like, Nico Health scan.
So what's the bull case here? Why is this going to be a huge thing that disrupts the market?
So I think if they can provide all of this within that price range,
$200.
Yeah, $200 is actually a low price range for all of the biomarkers that you get. If they can attract a segment of the population that won't already have been going through like annual physical exams, then that's where the winning part is, because they'll be able to detect loads of abnormalities that they'll be able to upsell with services either that they offer in-house or refer to other people who provide those services and get paid for that.
So as we're digging into this, like, one thing that struck me, which is very odd, is there's so much innovation happening in diagnostics around new types of MRIs, new dyes you can inject, circulating DNA, liquid biopsy, etc. So much happening. But the plethora of tests that they're doing here are like really simple, superficial, sensor-mediated type tests. Echocardiography, ECG, like pulse waveform
analysis.
Looks
like they're doing bioelectrical impedance.
Yeah, exactly.
This is like, what, 30-year-old tech? Nothing.
Yeah, moisture in your skin, photography. Like, I worked in dermatology in 2011. We were doing mole mapping and stuff. You know, it's just like using a camera. So it's kind of weird for me.
It's unusual. Because it's this actually proves the point that we already have the tech to do kind of general screening, general health screening. The issue is not the tech, because we already have these tests. This is similar to the stuff that I do, right? But the problem is, how do you bring in new people? How do you bring a large segment of the population to actually undergo these tests?
But they're totally avoiding that whole like transformation in healthcare diagnostics that's happened in precision medicine and so on. There's nothing precision. That's the word. There's nothing precision.
You don't need precision for screening.
No, I know, but that's interesting. No. Well, wait a second. There's a trial going on at the moment with the Galleri test in the NHS, which is the circulating tumor DNA screening test. I know it's not screening everybody. It's probably a subsegment of the population at slightly higher risk. So there is a paradigm of precision medicine, mass market screening. That's the thing, right? Or even invasive.
I agree with that. When it comes to cancer, of course. When it comes to general health, these guys are looking at heart health, metabolic health, skin health.
But there's nothing. It's just interesting to me that there's nothing precision about this. And I think we should dig into like why. Why is that? Like, what are they actually trying to do here? And are they trying to pick off like different set of conditions? They're trying to detect a different set of conditions.
Yeah, they want to serve the like 40% of people who have early heart disease, early metabolic dysfunction, early skin changes that can be improved drastically with early intervention.
They're launching in what, Sweden, and they're looking at Europe as a market. In most of these countries that have socialized healthcare systems, you can get most of this stuff done annually for free, I reckon.
No, you can't. No, you can't. Can't go to your doctor and say, hey, give me these 70 tests. They'll laugh you out the door.
But you can get the useful ones done, no? You could get the diabetic ones, the cardiovascular health ones.
Yeah, you can do them privately. It'll probably cost more. And it also will be a bothersome experience. You'll have to go to multiple labs to do it. So I think they're bringing a nice package altogether and under one umbrella. But they're also doing it at an affordable price and packaged in a way that is a bit different than your general like doctor checkup.
So we're digging into the bull case here. So what is the obvious first point, and I know this is a bit of a switch of gears, but like the obvious first point is that Daniel Ek is involved. For people who don't know, Daniel Ek founded Spotify. It's a multi-billion dollar publicly listed company. It's one of the darlings of consumer internet. Incredibly successful company. Daniel Ek, I'm absolutely certain, I haven't checked, but is a billionaire, hugely respected in the startup ecosystem. He's the kind of person that people write glowing profiles and do podcasts about. He's like a superstar. He's really like up there with in terms of like the tech founder elite. So somebody like that turning their attention to health is in itself a strong and interesting signal that anything that we see in this idea is probably going to be quite well thought through, because he will have access to technology experts, medical experts, healthcare, economics experts. Like, there's nobody, somebody like Daniel Ek can't get on the phone.
And can I add, he took on the music streaming industry when people, this was an ossified industry with loads of incumbents. People said, you can never do that. The recording industry complex will never let you do that. And he took it on and he succeeded with Spotify. And now he moves his, you know, crosshairs to health. It's the similar problem, right? So he's proven that he can do it in one arena already.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's like something that we shouldn't ignore. I think the other aspect of who's involved here, I don't know much about the CEO. I did look him up. I don't think he has a healthcare background, but he seems technical and worked in like energy or something. But if you look at the investors, so you've got three investors with star-studded healthcare portfolios. Lakestar backed Oscar, Atien, huge real-world evidence company, Allen, which is a unicorn in France in health insurance, AccuRx, which is like probably the most successful or best product, healthcare product company in the UK. Then you've got Atomico, backed AccuRx, Hinge Health, ZocDoc, QuitGenius, which is now Pelago, Gaia, a much younger, interesting company. Then you've got General Catalyst, who have like pages and pages on their portfolio website of like, you know, interesting healthcare companies. So these people know healthcare. They're healthcare-specific investors. They're not just like dabbling in a sector that they don't understand.
What's your opinion? Do you think that, because when we look at this business from the outside, it's difficult to see how a $200 scan like this is really going to make any money, or how it's doing anything innovative. But when you have investors like this on board, they must have presented them something interesting. Or could it have just been a case that it's Daniel Ek, here's my money? Do you think that's possible?
No. I think you're raising an important question, which is like a 250 euro scan, $200 scan is not going to build a huge business, especially when the level of physical interaction with the patient that's required. To do a mole map, you need a photographer, you need a physical space. It takes like 20 minutes to do the peripheral exam.
I don't know if that's true, though. What if they're building this, like they're being very tech heavy and they're going to build an experience that doesn't need actually...
Sure, like you still have to take blood. You still have to do like put all the sensors on the person's body to do the cardiovascular exam, et cetera, et cetera. And if you look at how they're doing blood pressure, it's literally sphygmomanometer, manometer, which is like the thing, you know, that you put in your ears and like a stethoscope, using a stethoscope and a pressure measuring device. This is quite operationally and in terms of human capital is going to be quite expensive to run. So the point is, that's not how they're going to make money. So how are they going to make money? That can't be how they make money. Because if it takes like half an hour for a patient to get through, for every, like, how many people can a clinic process in a day? Maybe they have like 5 rooms, 10 rooms. Even then, if they have 5 rooms, it's what, like 1,500 euros an hour, and they run an 8-hour day.
It's going to have to be in a central location and accessible. It's going
exactly,
to be expensive
and
to
all
run.
Of your costs. So that's not how they're making money, right? That's not how they're making money. So how are they going to make money?
So about, like, as I said, something like 40% of people will have some kind of abnormality on their blood tests after 40. Mm-hmm. So presuming that 40% of people who go in are going to find some kind of abnormality, they're going to be target customers for an upselling package of medications, treatments, plans, even referrals to other specialties.
So I think there's an analogy here, right? So this is how I think Daniel Ek is thinking about it. If you look at Spotify, Spotify is selling access to other people's content, other people's material, other people's service. Yeah, music as a service. So some random musician somewhere gets like a penny or a fraction of a penny when you listen to their song 300 times. Sorry, I'm being a bit salty. So Spotify is selling access to other people's content. I think that what they're trying to do here is that they're creating a kind of a home or a hub for your healthcare data, this type of healthcare data, which is not precision data, it's not invasive data, it's relatively like superficial, if I can call it like that, skin, blood tests, etc. But that becomes a launch pad for referral into other healthcare services that maybe they take a referral fee. It's a bit, if you think about it in like a funnel point of view, they could be building like a very resilient and defensible top of funnel service that's attracting customers at a loss or maybe break even, and then is making money off the services, whether in consumer health, like if they find that your moisture levels in your skin or your melanin, or there's some changes and they refer you for aesthetic services, or they refer you for traditional healthcare because your bloods are off, or your cardiovascular examination is off, or they refer you to a gym or a nutritionist because your CRP is elevated or what have you, HSCRP is elevated. So I think that it's that going to be that model where, just like Spotify is not making the music that you're listening to, I suspect that Nico will not make the healthcare services that people are consuming, but it will act as a kind of central hub, and it will challenge the EMR. It will challenge the medical record because it's immediately pulling together all of this medical history plus all of this like sensor data and building this like really rich multidimensional picture of your health from which it can then orchestrate your interactions with other service providers.
All right, let me add to this bull case bit, because they've been running this in stealth for like a year already, and they must have presented these investors with some good data. And to build on your point, I mean, they've shown that when people build the initial, or sorry, when they book the initial scan, 80% of them book a follow-on scan and pay for it the next year. So they've shown some good stickiness, some good retention there.
Yeah, I wouldn't read into those numbers, 80% follow-on, like you just have no idea how many people are in that sample.
Survey of six people.
Yeah, like I wouldn't read into it.
But then, okay, to build on your point though, they must have said, look, we've had 1,000 people come through our clinic, 40% of them, something abnormal came up, that's 400 people, and they bought, or we referred them on for services worth 10x that, and this is how we've made that money. They must have had something to show, right?
I think it's going to be something like that. So the other, it's almost like an insurance.
Did they raise? Is this the first round? Outside round?
Yeah. I mean, it'd be seed funded by Ek himself, I think. So that referral model, that could just be like a lead generation referral fee, but it could also be like a health insurance play here, where you pay them a subscription.
I think the real money is.
Yeah, they have the data, and then they're orchestrating your care, and it's the service is almost like an insurance service for the consumer. Alternatively, they have talked about research on their website, so it could be that they have partnerships with people who are trying to recruit to research studies, and they're gathering the type of data that would be either inclusion or exclusion criteria for trials. That's a very old business model. I think a lot of people are trying to do that, but it's another thing that I just came up as I saw the reference to research.
Healthcare is a really difficult business, and preventative health is even more difficult. I like people going into serious people coming into this problem, because it's a super complex problem. It's not very lucrative immediately. So, you know, I'm a fan.
Yeah. Can I quickly touch as well on this consumer research that's been done in Value Health? I'll put a link in. It's about the willingness to pay for health. And this study is actually done in Sweden, interestingly enough. It does show, as we probably all know, that the willingness to pay for consumers is much higher in times when you're treating people for actual problems versus what this is, which is prevention. So that's pretty obvious, right? But the interesting bit of the research when they did the kind of subgroup analysis was that in that group of people who are willing to pay for prevention, so we take specifically that small group of people, they are very, very motivated to pay. They are like extreme, even more than paying for treatment, actually. They're very enthused. And Adam, you must have noticed this with your longevity customers, that group are actually highly willing to pay, highly motivated people, and they probably make up a good customer base. So that's also good.
Yeah. Once you get it, like once you get that mindset.
Once you drink the Kool-Aid.
you won't spare any expense to know more about your body and how to improve your health.
Shall we do the bear case? Imran, you've got like 100 million notes on this.
Which, by the way, this whole idea, everyone says it's a small market, which I don't think it actually is. I think it's bigger than people think, first of all. But second of all, it's once you relay that message to someone and you convert that people to that this way of thinking about being serious about their health and prevention, then you have them for life. And if this is the critical part of growing a business like this. If you're the one to relay that message to a new customer, then you're going to win them over as a customer.
Adam, can you say your disclaimer?
That's going to be a challenge.
You should do your disclaimer.
Is this episode sponsored by Numenor? I haven't been paid yet by your startup, Adam, even though we keep shilling it every episode.
So the difference between us and what they do is we don't have a physical location, because I think that the physical location is a constraint.
Can you just get to the voucher code bit so we can move on?
Okay, go on then, Imran. What's the bear case?
No, so a bit more on the bull case, right? So we don't have great options for preventative care. I think the average consumer is like not that aware. Now, we've got this great clinic in Sweden. There are flights that go to Sweden several times a week from London. I can pay 500 euros for a flight. No, I'm just taking the piss. I cut that bit out. On the bull case, we don't have great options for like preventative care. And if I were living in Stockholm and this thing was being offered nearby, yeah, like maybe I would. You know, 250 euros is not a trivial amount of money, but it's not going to break the bank for most working people. And as Adam says, it could increase awareness about preventative health. It could give people a baseline. And I think if you handle all of the anxiety and other aspects of, you know, having more health information, I think it could be like the first mass market affordable step of like really broad multi-system data set, which is not, you know, excluding all the precision healthcare stuff. I think it's the kind of thing that a corporate who wants like healthcare benefits for their employees could get behind. The kind of thing that already has some precedent in the private healthcare market in the UK. I think at Bupa, at the age of 40, you could have like a full comprehensive health check, a bit like you can get on the NHS, but much, much more detailed. So I think that this brings some of that with a low price point to a much wider base. And I also think it's going to have a good user experience. You know, these are, Daniel Ek is a connoisseur of consumer experiences, has built one of the most successful iconic companies in history in the consumer tech space. So I think it will be like a breath of fresh air.
Wait, there's one more thing on the bull case, which is their lack of bullshit in terms of what they've picked to measure. So there's a lot of bullshit on the website, by the way. Mm-hmm. They mention 50 million data points. They mention AI without any clarification.
Your average iPhone that takes an 8,000 by 6,000 pixel shot, right, is 48 million data points. If they say they get 50 million data points, it's 50 million pixels in one of those photos. So it could just be like, we're taking a picture of your moles.
Right, right. But if you go to the fact sheet about the scan,
yeah,
the stuff that they measure is actually very reasonable.
No, like it's legit.
They don't do any of this like biological age bullshit.
aging markers,
epigenetic marker.
Wait, Adam, yeah. Adam, let me interrupt. So, what can you comment as a longevity doctor and second longevity startup? They've made a decision not to do some of the tests, which I think is smart, by the way, that you would expect a company like a tech bro made company to be doing, and those ones are like a whole body MRI scan or similar imaging modality. They've made a decision that they're not going to do those tests. What do you make of that decision? I think it's pretty smart, actually.
I think it's pretty smart, and it's pretty evidence-based as well. It seems like they're focusing on high value markers that are cheap. Instead of doing a whole body MRI scan, you're way more better doing the stuff that they are doing, just like looking at body fat percentage, estimating visceral fat, doing your blood pressure, doing cardiac and metabolic markers. That's way more informative and way more actionable.
For me, the other, just to build on that, the other key thing, even though each of these tests is a simple test that a medical student can be trained to do in like a week, is the combinatorial power of all of these tests. So if you look at like, if you do the echo and then you do the peripheral like waveform analysis, and then you do the perfusion and you do like, you know, heart rhythm, heart, you do all of these things together in combination, they're probably much more powerful because you're much less likely to be thrown off by a single spot recording, which is spurious on one examination point. Whereas if you have like 7 to 10 assessments of a single clinical system, like the cardiovascular system or your skin or your whatever else it may be, then you have a much, you can probably build much more confidence around your observations.
Yeah, and that's where the AI comes in. They might be building new kind of biomarkers of health or like surrogate markers of health that integrate all of these different biomarkers.
Okay. I think everyone's being a bit too positive. Adam, I know you're trying to get Daniel Ek to invest in your company, but can we move on to the bear case finally? Why is this not going to work?
Okay, so first issue is differentiation. Because we said that they're focusing on markers that you can get anywhere that are easily accessible. That just means that it's going to be difficult to differentiate yourself from other people who are doing similar stuff. And there's going to be a bunch of other startups, including one that I know of, that will be competing in this space, targeting the exact same customers. So that's going to be an issue.
On that one, sorry. Like a joke, Senna, you're joking about your own startup there, but I think what they've done is they've productized this particular experience. So any clinician can give you a menu to pick from to do any of these things in the context of like a Harley Street appointment or whatever. But I think
everyone's doing this now. Even blood testing companies, you go to like Randox Health, they have a longevity panel. They have a, so, you know, this is where the market is going.
Sure. But there's like, this is a product. Right. So these three things together, for whatever reason, they have some reason to believe that these three things in combination are like useful for whatever additional next step that they haven't revealed that we're speculating about, referral to other services or some kind of health insurance model, that this is a kind of product. It's like, I presume it's tightly integrated.
So this product,
and the scope is limited.
And the interesting part is that they usually this product is a high-end product targeted towards people who are high net worth, right? And that's where you make the money. You make the money on big margins because you're giving this like all-encompassing experience. But when the interesting part is they're doing it at a low cost, relatively, which is broadening the access to a whole swath of people. The thing that is going to be difficult is like, yeah, how do you make money on this?
Yeah, so and then that's back to the conversation we had earlier that this has to be a launch pad into something else with long-term potential, long-term value, and that's more scalable than actually getting in to see a technician to take your photos and blood pressure. So I think, yeah, so your point, what was your actual substantive point there on the bear case? That this is not differentiated?
Yes, the differentiation issue.
You made no sense, said nothing of substance. Can you clarify?
No, so okay, so basically what you're saying is that they're doing diagnostics that any clinician has access to. And my point was that, yes, but they're productizing it in some way.
Yeah, well, anyone can productize it is what I'm saying.
Well, like, but not everybody is doing that.
Like, 100 different companies doing the same thing.
I don't think there's any flexibility here, right? So if you go in there and be like, no, actually, I want you to do like a digital rectal exam.
They don't have any IPs.
I want you to do like, yeah, look, do an ear exam. And so they're not going to do that. Like they're giving you some...
No, I'm not. I'm talking about competing products, like actual product people packaging this stuff, you know, in the same way.
But they'll have a scalability. What comes out of the product? The implication of productization is this, that standardization and the reduction in the marginal cost of delivery of the product. Because they standardize it, there will be a non-clinically qualified technician who they can probably recruit lots of them to do your mole map. Yeah. To do your blood test. Maybe that requires a phlebotomist, but to do your, put the sensors on your cardiovascular system to take the readings. Yeah, these will be not. That's the difference.
If this works, that's why you can't
compete, or another private practice on Harley Street can't compete, because there you go and see a physician. You're seeing like an artisan who's offering you like a million different variations of a clinical exam, and they're doing them all themselves or with highly qualified nurses, right? So this thing can get to scale because they're cookie cuttering some standard set of clinical tests. That's the only point I'm making.
Okay. Imagine this. So, you know, Randox Health or Medichex in the UK, right? They have clinics all over the UK. They provide blood, they focus on blood tests. What if they, at their centers, added a scanner and started offering this same service.
Mole mapping and so on. No, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. Right. But most of the small cottage industry...
That's the differentiation I'm talking about.
Sure, but the cottage industry Randex of
Health,
like...
Randex Health is not a cottage industry.
No, it's I know. Like a... I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the cottage industry of like private healthcare assessments and longevity assessments. Largely, it's a cottage industry today. There is no major brand.
Yeah, that's not
the differentiation brand that's a gateway.
I'm saying, what is the moat here?
It's just that. It's just that they've turned it into a product, which is not really a big moat.
Exactly.
On the bear case, I would say that generally companies that emerge with huge, there's not so much hype around this, but there's a huge amount of money. They've published almost nothing. They've consistently declined interviews, I think, in the past. And some people have commented that, you know, they don't have like healthcare specialists in the founding team, although they have lots of doctors and so on. So you could look at that constellation of things and say, smells a bit hypey, massive round, like, you know, the hubris of the entrepreneur moving into an industry they don't understand, littered with dead bodies, like all over the place. Like we talked about Babylon recently and other companies that have tried and not succeeded, coupled with the challenge around European healthcare. I mean, there's also Cree, Livy, and other companies in the past have raised huge amounts of money that we can only assume have had aborted IPOs in the recent past or have downsized and have struggled. So European healthcare with this level of ambition does not have an amazing track record, especially consumer facing. And, you know, you could just look at that and say that's like, you know, a reason to be cautious.
Imran, you've previously brought this point up about healthcare being difficult to scale. Mm-hmm. And when I was looking at the business of Nico Health, as you've mentioned, the fact that they've productized it so much, it seems like this would not struggle with those issues. I mean, all you really need to do is, for example, if they're in Stockholm now, if you want to set up in Berlin, okay, there's some regulatory stuff, but all you really need to do is buy a premise and start offering the same service there. So to me, this looks like something that could hyperscale. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, but that's still harder to scale than like a software business or an e-commerce business. I mean, that's just the point I'm making. But I think within healthcare, yes. I mean, if you're, you could potentially have a model where you have non-clinical people on the ground delivering the diagnostics, and then you have like fully remote consultation.
To me, this looks like the difference between you trying to set up a bespoke restaurant in every city that uses like ingredients caught from the sea that day versus just throwing some vending machines around Europe. That's
yeah,
what it
I
looks
think
like
it's the
to
latter.
Me.
I think it's the latter. Yeah, but it depends what they're doing. So diagnostics in itself is actually not that interesting as a healthcare service, right? Like that's why I think we're speculating on what is the business model here. Is this a top of funnel lead magnet for people where you get fully like worked up, and then the money is actually made by referral to other healthcare services, or you start paying a subscription, it becomes like a health insurance business or something.
Yeah, I think the bull case or the bear case here is, you know, how good are they going to be at getting a part of that pie if they're not going to be the providers of that care?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you own the patient and the patient's navigation through the healthcare system, I think you'll be fine.
But I don't think that's why in socialized healthcare systems like in Europe.
No, but
you don't
like
own the
if
patient,
the...
you're obligated to refer the patient back to their healthcare provider if you find any abnormality. For example, I find if someone goes and they find that they have elevated blood pressure, let's go with something easy, right? That patient can be referred privately to treat their high blood pressure to a cardiologist, or they can be referred back to their primary healthcare provider to get it for free. The person is going to elect to go to their government chosen
government funded
provider.
GP. No, that's a good example. I think that's true. So it's the things. So maybe it's the like,
and they can't like withhold that information. They're, you know, they have to do that.
So it's going to be the follow up consultation opportunities, which would be outside the remit of a publicly funded healthcare system where they would actually intervene.
Yeah, which are
so it's going to be early prevention. Yeah, it's going to be like very early prevention, nutrition, skin health. There's going to be things that like if you go to your GP and say like the moisture level in my skin is reducing a bit, can you refer me to dermatology? They'll be
services,
like, no.
Like usually with these types of services, the type of customer is the type of customer that wants to have the, you know, similar services done in privately because they get a better experience and it's faster.
Yeah.
They're targeting a different customer that will be less likely to elect for a faster or more premium service.
Unless they are selling this, eventually going like B2B2C via employers.
I think that's what they're doing. Yeah. I think there's a big employer play here. That's always the second founder play is going B2B.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about the risks of early testing, like increased early testing and diagnostics. Because I think that more testing, which is counterintuitive, and this is why I have like a real problem with some of the podcasts out there that opine on certain like healthcare issues with very little like
name them.
Knowledge. No, like the classic example is like some real estate investor or some like, you know, some like big Twitter personality that's like, oh yeah, you know, I had like a full body MRI and I found this polyp in my bowel or something, and I'm so glad I did it, and everybody else should have this scan as well. And like 3 days later, I had it excised and it was found to be, you know, another example. I think in the All In podcast, for example, they've talked about full body MRIs and things like that in the past. And they made like quite a compelling case about, you know, wouldn't you rather know? Wouldn't you rather find out, etc. That's the kind of line of argument. I think the issue is that in medicine, like we have quite a lot of examples in the past of diagnostics which have been developed, different types of tests. So prostate-specific antigen is one example. This is a blood-based biomarker. It's a molecule which is produced in the prostate, which has been correlated with like increased risk of prostate cancer. But having a high level of prostate-specific antigen does not necessarily mean you have prostate cancer. And so you have this conundrum where lots of people get tested. They find that they have an elevated level of this prostate-specific antigen. They then go down this whole like diagnostic pathway where they're having biopsies and they're having procedures and they're being followed up for years and years and years, which is causing lots of anxiety. It can cause physical.
Yeah, you mentioned MRI, which is a good example here. A systematic review of whole body MRI scans in people, in healthy people, showed that more than 30%, I think it was 31% of people undergoing scans found masses or kind of undetermined lesions that required further investigation that turned out to be like benign or, you know, non-significant issues.
Imran, can I just say I totally disagree with everything you're saying in relation to Nico, because I don't think these examples you're giving, I don't think they're doing any of this stuff. So whilst I agree that screening is not always a good idea and it can cause harm, I think Nico have been very sensible. They're not doing these cancer markers that have lots, throw off lots of false positives. They're not doing full body MRI scans. To me, from the list of scans they are doing, they seem very sensible. The tests they're doing don't throw off lots of false positives, and we have good ways of treating and investigating those further.
That's a fair point.
That's a fair point, but like you could just get like a slightly elevated CRP and it'd be slightly anemic. Mm. And before you know it, you've had like an OGD, you've had a colonoscopy, you've had a this and you've had a that, you've had like a couple of CT scans.
Primary care knows how to deal with these types of results.
This is not primary care.
They have a doctor on site who can deal with this.
No, but this is my point about like incentives. You just don't know. Like, I hope it is like that. Mm. But when you own the...
I think the benefit of doing like lipid panels and, you know, simple things like glucose levels, fat percentages, visceral fat estimations, like I think the benefits way outweigh the risks of finding, you know, spurious results.
Yeah, no, the point is well taken, but I think it's just... You know, it's a general problem in the space.
There is a risk there. It's a general problem with these types of businesses, especially people who do markers that are not validated to improve clinical outcomes that people care about. So things like whole body MRI scans, biological age tests. A company we talked about that is, you know, targeting the same audience that we talked about previously was Tallyhealth. Tallyhealth are doing blood tests. They're doing an intervention, but basically what they're doing is a unvalidated blood test that doesn't mean anything, and they're giving you supplements that haven't proven to do anything, right? So if you can contrast this Nico Health to something like Tally Health, they're being way more rigorous, way more scientific, and I think way more beneficial.
What do you think about this angle that, you know, tech people, like, they experience a problem themselves, which is they can't get, you know, full, you know, it's like there's a lot of like interest in longevity amongst the billionaire class, and they sort of experience this thing and it's like frustrating, but they're quite detached from the healthcare concerns or needs of the wider population at large. So they kind of build this thing for themselves and for their friends. Yeah, who are looking for this type of concierge medical mole mapping, like, you know, waveform and pulse waveform analysis, etc.
I mean, everyone needs to do these types of tests at some point in their life. So, you know, I don't think they're doing so. They're targeting some niche, weird person who is going to do like some weird test. It's literally, you know, the basics of screening and preventative health tests. So I wouldn't say that what they're doing is kind of out there.
You're already a tech bro, Adam, so you can't see out. So you're drinking the water in the fishbowl. Like, you can't see the point I'm making. So, like, basically, so there's this tweet, which is like, this guy, Duncan Reese, he says, in the Valley, you work on stuff you see affecting you and your buddies that they can and will pay for. This is that.
I don't know. I mean, I don't like this whole meme of like making fun of tech bros. But,
it affects me personally.
Tech bros.
Is it a protected characteristic of yours, Adam?
But, no, it's just like, what have traditional doctors done in this space? Like, it's a huge problem and we haven't really done much. So like, we need a good tech bro to solve some of our problems.
So let's like synthesize. Like, my like takeaway here, actually, in all honesty, like, I know we've sort of thrown a bit of shade and stuff, but my takeaway is that I actually think this is very interesting. I'm curious to understand the business model. It feels like a sensible European approach to preventative, like less hypey, more like grounded in traditional clinical practice and skills and intuition approach to preventative and long-term health. But I'm curious to see what the impact is and how on the healthcare system and on these patients' health and how their health outcomes are improved and also what the business model turns out to be. But I'm very interested.
My takeaway is that I'm actually really impressed by the way they package there and the way they, you know, are presenting it. As someone in this space who's been thinking about how to package similar services, it's quite interesting to see, you know, the pros have a go at it.
And I guess the question remains, though, is how they're going to make money. And that will be something we'll probably cover in the future when it starts making sense. From our discussion, I still have no idea.
And to be honest with you, I think they have to be applauded for not including those more expensive tests that carry radiation risk, like full body CTs or whatever.
Well, to keep the cost low, I think they started with the cost. This is how I think they came to this scan.
No, but even that's a design choice, right?
Because the business model is, I mean, the business innovation here is actually the price point.
Yeah, but lots of people would traditionally say, pick a small number of, like, you know, people who are willing to pay a lot more to like get your business off the ground. Yeah, that's like the Tesla model. There's like lots of models.
Yeah, but that's unless you can raise a lot of money. And I think this guy, because of his background, he can raise a lot of money, so he can start with a different starting point and then play the long game, which is risky but interesting to watch.
I think interestingly, I found these tweets, and we can pull them up from the CEO, where he's having a debate with a guy who actually works at a company that I invested in called AWell Health, a great company. And the CEO is responding to this like standard concern here, which is that more testing leads to more like false positives, leads to more stress, more biopsies and more harm. And he's basically saying that that's actually the opposite of what they're trying to do, because, you know, they've picked their modalities not as CT and MRI for the reasons that have been mentioned in terms of like incidental findings, and that they were never designed to be like preventative diagnostics. They're not cheap. They're not accessible to all. Instead, they're charging a much lower amount of money. And what they're trying to do basically is R&D for new devices, new diagnostic devices. And I think what they're developing is these devices hand in hand with traditional methods like that you would use in a clinical examination to measure blood pressure, peripheral pulses, oxygenation, changes in the skin, etc. So it's clear that there's like a very, very big angle here, which is around developing new diagnostic devices. And there's a kind of open question as to whether this becomes like a consumer electronics company in the future.
No, I think that's the question of like differentiation. Mm-hmm. I think that's the answer to that question, which is like, that's going to be their IP, the way they bring the cost down without like affecting the margins, where like other providers won't have access to those devices.
So you're saying that they will just keep the devices to themselves and become a provider that has these unique devices?
Yeah.
Yeah, they might do that. They might sell them. They might sell them as consumer electronics, or they might license them to others.
Yeah, breakthrough devices. Yeah, of course.
But beyond that, I think, you know, how else do they monetize it in the near term? Because they will need more revenue than €250 per patient per scan.
That's why they raised so much money.
Yeah, and so I think exactly, and so I think in this case there are like a few different interesting ways that it could go around selling leads to other healthcare providers for follow-up care and treatment, around other services that they might choose to offer themselves. Maybe even becomes a bit like a health insurance model, where you pay them a monthly subscription and then you have access to some services off the back of your diagnostic results, whether for your skin or for your weight loss or whatever it may be.
This was a good due
So.
diligence session. We should start charging for like.
So we had a good bit of feedback again this week, some very nice comments. One from a user on YouTube saying, "A wonderful podcast. The chemistry between Adam and Imran is unique and interesting. Keep going, guys, and a special greeting to Adam."
Special greeting to Adam. Do you two like each
You think
other?
this.
Would you say there's good chemistry?
I would love to meet you in person, Adam.
I think we have good chemistry. Yeah, I
I
agree.
think we have great chemistry.
Someone asked me that the other week. It was like, "Are Adam and Imran friends?" And I was like, I wouldn't say friends, colleagues,
Frenemies.
frenemies."
No,
Does
we're
Adam have
great. We're
friends? I don't know.
No, of course, we're great friends. Love you, Adam.
Then.
Love you too, man. And sorry that you didn't get a what was it? The guy
You
said
didn't get a shout out from this.
a
A
shout
special
out. Yeah,
greeting. Special greeting.
special
I don't think
greeting.
it was a guy, dude.
Yeah.
All right. The other bit was from Hassan Naveed, who said, "Best podcast on YouTube, and I watched them all." Thank you, Hassan. That's very nice of you. And last bit from Mojgan Payamba, saying she's from Primasun, saying, "Really enjoyed the discussion." Prayer emoji. So yeah, good feedback. I think people are enjoying it. And I think by covering some more topical,
Yeah.
interesting topics, not getting into the weeds too much.
So, Adam, why were you on time today? What did you do differently?
I
What did you
don't
do
know.
differently?
I'm just like pumped for the podcast. I've been like thinking about it all day.
Don't believe you. What did you do? Did you like set an alarm or something?
I sent him three reminders over like 3 days.
He
So
did. He
I
did.
did.
He
I
did.
sent There was like the original poll, see what time we'll do. There was a calendar invite, then a message, then there was a message today. Yeah, so 4 times.
So this is my second podcast in a row where I'm on time.
No, you were not on time last
No, you
time.
weren't. You
What are you talking
Was
about?
that?
The last one. You were on
Last
time
time.
to the rescheduling we did because you'd cancelled on the previous
No,
one.
no, you canceled the first time. Then the second one, you didn't turn up. And that's when we started abusing you on WhatsApp saying, get in front of
Oh yeah,
your
fair
camera
enough.
or we're going to ditch you forever. Even though we need you because you have a big social media following.
Imran, this is why me and you are gonna split the AdSense revenue, the £3 that we got this month.
Yeah.
I don't get a
You can't
pound.
even buy a
Yeah.
coffee.
Okay. Nice one, guys.
All
See
right.
you soon.